Greetings, Alpha Seekers, Nugent Ventures post-election edition. And looks like a blue sweep in Georgia. They've got one down, and the other one looks like it's going blue, too, which is pretty much what I was expecting. And I would have to say, apparently, the market was, too. So either that was already baked, which is probably the case. Although if you listen to CNBC, as I do every day, so you don't have to, you would probably not have expected that, but you could kind of see the trading going that way. And the consensus, obviously, the markets, you know, people were talking about a 10% drop on the news, and that's not happening. So kind of a pleasant surprise. In fact, I want to make sure my old eyes don't see as well as they once did. But S&P, NASDAQ, and Russell are all in the green today, which is, to me at least, very surprising. Dow is up almost 2%. Let's see if I can pick up some of these. They go kind of slow on these. NASDAQ's up a half a point. It was down early. And Bitcoin, of course, is up 3%, which is the dollar trade. The thinking that, okay, S&P up 1.17. So that's great, you know. It's a pleasant surprise. I mean, my main political interests these days are purely financial. Interestingly, gold is down and Bitcoin's up a couple of points. So I think I probably could not do better than there was a NASDAQ market brief today, which was a video clip. And I don't think I could probably do a better job of explaining what's happening and why. So I refer you to the exciting Nugent Ventures LinkedIn page, wherein you will find the link to that. So give that a listen. And I pretty much obviously am, you know, I'm just in the peanut gallery here. You know, I listen to people. I don't claim to be any kind of an expert per se. So, but the guy on there, I forget where, I think he's from the UK. And a couple of things I would call out, first of all, is that the 10-year treasury rate just popped over 1%, which if you've been around as long as I have, that's not a BFD, as Joe Biden would say. That's, you know, I remember when treasuries were paying, you know, I don't know, 13%. So this is a nothing burger, you know, for those of us who are boomers and remember way back when we had to walk to school, this is nothing. But it is something compared to where we've been. That's been resistance for the 10-year treasury yield. And so that changes some things. First of all, it's a signal that the market is probably banking on dollar weakness and perhaps inflation. And the Fed is all for it. You know, the Fed is dying to get inflation over 2%. They've been trying to do it for years. So if that happens, the Fed is not going to stop it. If it starts to get over 2, and I'll believe that when I see it, then it could be that the Fed steps in and tightens. So what that essentially does is start to give the risk-free rate of return some meaning. And I think that, you know, obviously I think that's reflected in gold. Because when the risk-free return is zero, one of the big reasons you don't want to hold gold is because it returns zero, right? So if treasuries return nothing, then, you know, you don't have that much interest risk by sitting in gold, because you're not getting much anyway, anywhere. If you start to get a return on cash, the risk-free rate of return of the 10-year treasury, then that becomes a less easy thing to do. And I think at some point that's got to affect Bitcoin too, because Bitcoin's like gold without the metal, right? So it's got a limited supply, and that's the advantage of gold. You can't turn anything else into gold, alchemy aside, at least not at this point. So, and you can't turn anything else into Bitcoin, at least not until somebody figures out how to hack it. So those two things have in common the fact that you can't just create it out of thin air as you can with the fiat currency. And that's why they do well if the printing presses or the computer servers, more accurately, are, you know, running overtime. That's what everybody expects. And I saw it today. So I think maybe that is bearish for Bitcoin and for gold. But, you know, on the other side is the debauchment of the currency and the inflation issue. So that tends to favor assets. So we'll see how that all shakes out. But that's my personal thinking on it, is that if you can get a yield on risk-free treasuries, then that makes it harder to be in gold, or Bitcoin. The offset is that, you know, the dollars that you invest may be worth, you know, if you put a dollar in, you may get 90 cents back in terms of the actual purchasing power. So, and then there was some interesting dialogue back and forth on alphas, or Seeking Alpha, which I'm now participating in as Nugent Ventures. And we're thinking of writing something there. So, you know, the dialogue goes around, will the renminbi, which is the Chinese currency, which for some reason is also called the yuan, which, you know, things like that trouble me. But it's like the dollar is called the buck, I guess, maybe. I don't know. What do I know? I don't speak Chinese. But maybe I better learn. But there is a debate as to whether the renminbi will become the reserve currency, which I don't think it will, because, you know, what we've got in this world today is a trust crisis. Nobody trusts anybody, less so than I think even they used to. And this is not uncommon among human beings, because human beings generally can't be trusted, with certain exceptions like Nugent Ventures, of course. But you know, you got to be careful who you trust. And the Chinese government, very powerful. Obviously, U.S. government, all these governments, very powerful and not very trustworthy. Depending, either, you know, whoever's in power, the other side doesn't trust in the U.S. And nobody trusts the Communist Party, not even the party members. So that's why I think in Bitcoin, we trust is starting to become, you know, most people don't trust in God these days, or a lot of people don't. You can't trust your own country, your own government, so you trust something like Bitcoin because theoretically, you know, it's hard-coded. And then you trust gold because gold has survived any number of regimes, including the Roman Empire and the Greek Empire and the Babylonian Empire, and, you know, so it's got a good track record. It's unlikely people will start throwing away their gold, despite the fact that, and if they do, a lot of people will pick it up, you know what I mean? So I think what you got is a crisis in confidence in governments in general, in sovereign states and their sovereign currencies. But remember, they still have the guns and the tanks and the nuclear weapons. So, you know, you can, power is embodied in two things. One is money, but if all else fails, then there's military power. And that's one of the arguments I got into, or debates, I should say, on Seeking Alpha. Somebody made a comment, which I agreed with, which is, you know, who's going to fight and die for the renminbi, or for Bitcoin particularly? Actually, for the renminbi, plenty of them, well, billions. But who's going to fight and die to defend the value of Bitcoin? Nobody. And honestly, when our boys and women go fight and shed their blood overseas. In part, what they're fighting for is the full faith and credit of the United States government as expressed in the U.S. dollar. So people will criticize defense spending, but they have to understand that when you cut back on your military prowess, your kinetic power, that undercuts your currency as well. And that's not necessarily advisable. You don't see the Chinese doing that. You don't see the Russians. I mean, the ruble's not worth much anyway, but, you know, when push comes to shove, the guy who shoves hardest is the one whose currency is the reserve currency. So, but, you know, the other thought that occurred to me on that subject is that what if the Chinese say, hey, you know what? You're dependent on us for all your stuff now. We make all your stuff. And you know what? You got to pay us in our own currency. We don't take dollars anymore. What would happen? Would we, you know, they could peg that anywhere they want. Would the renminbi become a reserve currency? And particularly if you untether energy. Now, they still use a lot of coal, which they have in their own country. They don't import, as far as I know. They still use a lot of oil, which they do have to import. And at the moment, the Middle Eastern countries, and we certainly don't accept renminbi. Dollars are the, in fact, the dollar is pegged more to oil than it is the gold. It's not pegged to gold at all, except as a free-floating trade. So, you know, if the Saudis, for example, say, and the Russians say, you know what, we will take renminbi in return for our oil, that's big. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it could. And if Apple and all these other guys who make everything in China have to pay with renminbi, what are they going to do? Are they going to, you know, go to the currency exchange and take whatever exchange rates on offer? And then are they going to start charging for their phones in renminbi instead of dollars? Or are they going to say, you know what, we're not going to do that, and we're going to create some fabs in Vietnam, or we're going to make our own ships, and we're going to make them here? I don't know. But that would be one way that the Chinese could move into a reserve currency mode, or they could do it just within their own sphere of influence in the Asia-Pacific region. I don't think the Indians would be too excited about that. Not our, you know, native indigenous folks like myself, but the South Asian Indians, because they hate China. I think they hate us less. So, and I don't know the rupee, I guess. I don't know where that stands in the currency. It's not the reserve currency, that's for sure. So I think you're probably going to see the dollar have more run room here as the currency of choice. English being the currency, the language of choice for, say, for international flying, aviation, in a word. So, you know, I don't know that these are going to be colossal ramifications, but those are the kinds of tectonic plates that move back and forth in the economy over longer scales of time. So, not as bad a day as one might have thought in the wake of the election, assuming that Purdue race goes to the challenger, which I think it will, and assuming it holds up on an audit. You know, the theory is that the Senate will be run from the center, and Joe Biden certainly in the center, so hopefully that's the case. You are probably looking at attempts to raise taxes on cap gains, taxes on income. You know, definitely this state and local tax exemption, I forget the acronym for that, but there was a woman from New York on Today banging on the table about the need to reinstate the state and local tax SALT, state and local tax deduction, because that's killing places like New York and Illinois. Well, not, yeah, to some extent Illinois, but, you know, all the high-tax jurisdictions are getting killed by that. And this Exodus, Escape from New York is the name of this movie, that's just killing them. And what's interesting about it, though, is, you know, if you're a national Democrat, you should be probably all for that. Because look at Arizona. Look at Georgia. I mean, these have become purple, if not blue, states. And it's because all these people who flee from the high tax jurisdictions that were created by the blue governments then go to their new home and they vote blue. So they, you know, it's like they don't learn from the mistakes of the past. They repeat them. So if you keep pushing people out of the blue states, the urban states, you know, Chicago, not that Chicago is a state, but, you know, Illinois/Chicago, L.A., San Francisco/California, New York/New York City in the tri-state area, New Jersey, Connecticut, and they all go to places like Florida and Georgia and Arizona and Texas. Eventually, they'll, you know, they don't vote with their pocketbook, and they will turn these red states blue, and that's when you'll have one-party government just like you have here in Chicago and in Illinois and Cook County. But the other thing is that, you know, people don't change their colors per se, their true colors, shall we say, as much as one might think. It becomes anathema to be a Republican. You know, if you want to make it in business or anything, you're going to have trouble walking around with a MAGA hat. But they still have the same core values. You know, they still believe in meritocracy, most of them. And capitalism, most of them. So, like in Chicago and Cook County and Illinois, even as a state, there's factions within this Big Tent Democratic Party. So you really have different two or three or four different parties within the Democrats. There's the middle of the road Democrats, and then there's the progressive left wing Democrats, and so, you know, it's like, it's only a party. It's only one party in name. In Chicago, that breaks on, you know, Latino versus African American, pretty much. Countywide, it's between the suburbs and the city, and statewide, it's between downstate and upstate. So these are not monolithic parties at all. And the center of them tends to remain toward the center because you still have the primaries. The primaries are the generals in these sorts of environments. And I think, you know, if the country moves in that direction where basically the Republicans are marginalized, not that they're there yet, but if that happens, then, you know, the primaries are the general. And so in the primary general this year, Bernie Sanders lost to Joe Biden. So Joe Biden becomes the de facto conservative. And Kamala Harris, too. So, you know, and in the Senate, you certainly have a lot of conservative, moderate Democrats. Moderate is the new conservatism, is what it boils down to. So, you know, not the end of the world, God knows. And certainly not the end of the world in the market, not the end of the market. Mr. Market is nonplussed. So that's good news as far as I'm concerned. And I'm going to get now probably $3,200 more that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise because they kind of bought this one down in Georgia by saying that they were going to vote for that $2,000 handout. And so, great, you know, not means tested or anything, no net worth tax. So that's great, you know, show me the money. If this is the new socialist paradise, I, for one, welcome my new socialist masters. And I'll be happy to take that money. So every little bit helps. And to me, it's a little bit, frankly, you know. But to some people, it's a lot. And, you know, those are the people who should get it. I shouldn't get it. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to take it. So, anyway, that's where we're at. So that's my reaction to the elections. I suppose there's still some slim chance that Perdue will find a way to find those votes, like Trump said the other day on the phone, but I doubt it. I think that's a 99% certainty that there's two Republicans or two Democrats coming from Georgia, probably for the first time since 1970-ish. So that's a 50-year epochal change in Georgia. So that's it for today. Live long, prosper, be safe. The vaccine is not ready for you yet. So, bye-bye.